The Capital Investment Committee will come to order on Thursday morning, and we're starting off with a local team. Representative Zahn, Mayor Carter, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Same members.
Please proceed with House File 1080. Is that it? Yeah. We don't have the bill in our possession, but we can talk about the bill.
Okay.
And then we will consider your 7 minutes as your presentation for the bill when we do get in possession of the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members and Madam Chair. It brings me great pleasure to be here this morning with all of you. I'm sad that I was just told by staff that I can't share treats with you all. It was not for bribery, but, you know, it was just a little warm treat that my mother woke up this morning at 5 a.m. to make to share with all of you. However, I do have no bill here in job, so I'll be sharing with my colleagues in the other committee room. But then I also want to share a story. The reason why I'm here today with my mayor of St. Paul is because of a very important priority in the city of St. Paul. As you all know, there is a bridge called the Public Bridge that connects my district to downtown St. Paul, where over 10,000 commuters use every day. In fact, my mom uses that bridge to deliver her treats to vendors every morning. And so I'm here today to ask the committee to support to include the 3rd Street Kellogg Boulevard Bridge in your bonding. This is the city's bonding priority, and it is in my district. The 3rd Street Bridge was originally constructed and owned by the state of Minnesota in the year 1982, the very same year that I was born, 36 years ago. And so as you can imagine, it's in need of a lot of work and dire need of your support. And so it is the longest bridge in the city of St. Paul at 2,100 feet long. By comparison, the typical bridge owned by the city of St. Paul is roughly 250 feet long. And in fact, statewide, only 2 bridges of this length are owned by cities. This bridge and the city of Minneapolis, the 10th Street Bridge. This critical infrastructure in St. Paul that connects residents in my district and Minnesotans from throughout the East Metro to downtown St. Paul. I'm happy to be here today with my mayor, who will share more about the 3rd Street Kellogg Bridge. Mr. Mayor?
Mayor Carter.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for inviting me here this morning. My name is Melvin Carter, and I serve as mayor of the city of St. Paul. I greatly appreciate the opportunity to testify before you. I want to say thank you to Chief Bill Author, Representative Jay Zhang, and all of our co-authors, including our entire St. Paul delegation. The 3rd Street Kellogg Boulevard Bridge is the city's top priority bonding request. It was originally constructed, as Representative Zhang shared, and owned by the state of Minnesota before being transferred to city ownership in 1983 with no funding or support provided for maintenance. It's unusual for a city to own a bridge of this size. The vast majority of city-owned bridges in St. Paul are 250 feet long and supported by 2 piers. The 3rd Street Kellogg Bridge is 2,100 feet long and supported by 19 piers. In fact, as Representative Song has already stated, statewide there are only 2 bridges of this length owned by cities, the other being that 10th Street Bridge in Minneapolis, whose reconstruction this committee wisely provided funding for in 2017. The city is asking for the state to partner with us to ensure that this bridge continues to be a safe connection from the East Metro to our capital city for the 14,000 residents and commuters who use it daily. You should have a one-page document with information about the bridge in your packet. I also have additional information here to share with you. The 3rd Street Bridge is a regional transportation connector for businesses and residents and contributes, thank you, to the vitality and livability in the metro area. It connects our Mounds Park neighborhood to Lower Town and the Downtown Entertainment District. Residents who drive, bike, and walk from the East Metro use the 3rd Street Bridge to come into downtown St. Paul. It also serves as one of the East Metro's critical transportation connectors. In fact, the Gold Line Bus Rapid Transit, scheduled to start service in 2024, is planned to operate on the 3rd Street Bridge. We need the bridge ready. and operating so we can take full advantage of the Gold Line. Unfortunately, the 3rd Street Bridge has become an unwelcoming corridor to residents and our guests, as the city has had to restrict its use since 2014. Currently, chain link fences and jersey barriers are in place to reduce 4 lanes of traffic to 3 and to close the sidewalk on one side of the bridge. Although the usability of the bridge has been decreased, we still need to maintain 100% of the bridge, and the cost to do that continues to increase. The city uses staff and financial resources to maintain and ensure the safety of the 3rd Street Bridge. Traffic volumes on our bridge haven't decreased significantly with the limited use, and we're still seeing right around 14,000 vehicles per use per day as of our latest count. The St. Paul Public Works Bridge Division typically inspects our bridges annually. Because of our concerns about this bridge, we are inspecting it bimonthly. The 3rd Street Bridge design is currently safe because the city has restricted the traffic and those loads. It was designed to the governing design code and standards of that time. However, a couple of years after it was built, we discovered that bridges across the county built with this design into this code were showing shear cracks in the pier cantilevers. Cantilevers are the horizontal part of the pier that extends beyond the columns to hold up the bridge. The next version of the bridge design code corrected this design code issue for bridge pier cantilevers. The 3rd Street Bridge is safe in its current restricted configuration. To meet safety requirements and structural code changes, the city has already reduced the lanes and also reduced the sidewalk and bike path on the south side of the bridge. Due to the difficulties of addressing the original design code issues, the most cost-effective long-term solution is to reconstruct the bridge using today's governing code. The 3rd Street Bridge needs immediate attention to keep this key corridor truly reliable and safe while improving the connectivity and vitality to the greater Twin Cities metro area. Again, having been originally constructed and owned by the state of Minnesota, we feel it's reasonable and appropriate to ask the state to help with that reconstruction. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor. Tell me about the pedestrians on this bridge. Are they allowed now?
There are sidewalks on two sides of the bridge. The sidewalk and bike lane on the south side of the bridge has been restricted, so they're still allowed on the other side.
Okay. Thank you. And this is the St. Paul's first priority?
This is absolutely St. Paul's first priority. It has been on our bonding list every year since 2015. It's been number one with the exception of, well, it was came into last year's bonding legislative session, number one with our ramp. However, we ended up losing, as we've kind of waited in the queue, we ended up losing $7 million in federal funding along with almost $2 million in state funding that would have matched that. And so we pulled it back a little bit last year in hopes to restore that funding, which we have not been able to restore.
So it will not leverage the federal money?
Madam Chair, we will not be – that $7 million funding, that $7 million grant that we had from the federal government has expired, and we were not able to access those dollars.
Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You just covered one of the questions that I had regarding federal funding, but just some clarifications, Mayor Carter. So this is from 3rd Street to Lafayette. This does not account for the other side of the bridge, which is about roughly Wabasha to something. Is that correct? The scope of this is just that section from 3rd to Lafayette?
This would cover, let's see, do you have this?
Yep.
Okay, perfect. Yes, this is this graphic here shows the portion of the bridge that this would cover for us.
And, Madam Chair?
Representative Juergens.
And when we did the bonding tour last year and we were under the other section of the bridge, that looked to be deteriorating as well. But this is your top priority versus that stretch? I guess I just want some clarification.
Madam Chair, Representative Juergens, if possible, I'd like to ask Kathy Lantry, our Public Works Director, to come and address that question specifically, please.
Welcome, Ms. Lantry.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
So when we did the bonding tour, there's the other section of Kellogg Boulevard that most people don't even realize is a bridge.
Yep.
And we were under that. We saw the deterioration of that, and this project does not include that section of bridge, correct?
Madam Chair, Representative, it does not.
Okay. But yet this bridge is a higher priority than that? Could you talk a little bit about the two projects, please?
Sure.
Ms. Lantry.
Madam Chair, Representative, the reason why this bridge is our number one priority is because the lane restrictions have caused the bridge to be, we're only using about 60, or we reduced it by about 60% of its usable space. And the bridge, we feel like, because it's such an important connection to the East Metro, that we want to get it repaired, because to have a bridge that where you have four lanes but you only use three of them doesn't make any sense. The other bridge, the Kellogg Bridge that's adjacent to the ramp, the City of St. Paul has will be working on construction of that going forward in the next couple of years. The reason why that bridge initially was part of the ramp is because it is exactly next door to the River Center ramp, and so we thought it made sense to join the two, because otherwise the ramp would be built, and then 2 years later we would build the bridge adjacent to it, and then the road would be closed again. So it made sense to marry the two at the time, doing a little bit of advanced construction. In the meantime, the City of St. Paul, excuse me, is gathering funds to reconstruct that bridge.
Okay, Madam Chair, just one other follow-up, too. Thank you, Madam Chair. Are there any plans, then? I know that this part of the funding for this would include planning a design, but would there be a desire to add any on-ramp or off-ramp to I-94 from this bridge?
Ms. Lantry.
Madam Chair, Representative, because of the work that's going to be happening with the Gold Line, which is the bus rapid transit coming from Woodbury, there are changes that will happen at the Mounds Boulevard, which is the eastern end of this bridge. There will be some lane configuration changes that will be made to accommodate the bus, but otherwise there are no other on or off ramps. It's just a 2,100-foot bridge between Lafayette on the western edge and Mounds Boulevard on the top. But those reconfigurations would be done to accommodate the Gold Line.
Okay, thank you very much.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mayor Carter. This is, I think, an important project to get done. I do recognize its importance to the City of St. Paul, and it nearly happened two other times. In 2017, we had to balance between a bridge in Minneapolis and yours, and wound up basically through some compromises doing Minneapolis. The thought was to do yours last year, and we would have last year had not the ramp supplanted it as another priority. So I think this is an important project that we should try to get done in this bonding cycle.
Mayor Carter.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, thank you very much for that acknowledgement. We certainly agree.
But you don't have the ramp, do you?
I'm sorry?
Did you get money for the ramp?
Madam Chair, we received $5 million to help with deconstruction of the ramp, demolition of the ramp, which will be very helpful when we're able to reconstruct that ramp. We have spent $2.5 million over the course of the summer to shore up that ramp. We've installed kind of the netting and some of the safety procedures, which has given us a little bit of time to work. We're in the process of releasing a request for development interest on that ramp so that we can do what this, I think, committee asked us to do, and that is pursue every option available there, and which we will be doing. I believe there will come a time where we'll be back here to have that conversation, because that's going to be a very difficult thing to do without state support. But that $2.5 million that we've spent to shore that up over the course of this summer, and I know members of this committee remember the dire state that we were in, as we've had chunks of ceiling falling down on one particular car. Which is why that became such a high priority for us last year. It gives us an opportunity to take a step back on that ramp, and also this bridge continues to be in the state of repair that it's been since before 2017 when that conversation was had.
Thank you very much. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Zhang, and for bringing this forward. Pretty exciting project. I think many of us in the East Metro use this to get downtown to go, like coming from districts like Representative Juergens and myself, and it's a corridor that's pretty important. We've got 3M right down the road, and it's you know, leads a lot of us into St. Paul for the farmers market and River Center and Excel hockey games or stuff like that, the Saints games. You know, it's really a way for us to get in and from this direction, and or to get out to as well. So it's really important. So, and we were on the tour and up there with the and those and saw it close up and those lifts, and it definitely needs some attention. But just on another matter, we're all we had an opportunity to get up early. Chair Murphy took us on a tour of your new project over there, and the St. Paul's or the soccer team, and we're pretty excited about it. That was an amazing tour, and it's going to be an amazing asset for the city, of course, and the state. So many of us are excited, and thank you for your leadership, Mr. Mayor, on that. And anyways, that has nothing to do with this, Mr. Young, or Representative Zhang, but we're all pretty excited about that. Pretty amazing tour. We all should have wore our scarves this morning.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize for being late this morning. We had committee till midnight last night, so just took me a little bit longer to get going. Representative Zhang, this is a project that's been around us for a long time. I think that oftentimes when we think about these large projects in Minneapolis, St. Paul, we often come at it from a perspective that, you know, we always seem to fund these large amounts of money to Minneapolis and St. Paul, and I think one of the things that's critical to remember relative to them is these bridge projects are roadways and projects that are used by many, many different people throughout the region and, of course, many, many different people throughout the state. So although they may be located in St. Paul, the regional significance of projects like this are very immense, and we can't forget that as we consider this project moving forward. So, again, thank you that you're being persistent on this and continue to come back. And my hope is that you'll keep coming back, maybe not for this project, maybe for some other projects that might be significant to the people of the state of Minnesota as well. So thank you.
Thank you very much. We will certainly consider this. Representative Pearson.
So in 1983, the bridge was turned over to the city of St. Paul. The description was that there were no funds given to the city of St. Paul at that time. Well, was there a request by the city of St. Paul to make that happen, or what was the impetus to make that happen? And was it basically an acknowledgement that the state didn't want to spend money on it, or more background there would be appreciated? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Representative, I cannot say that I was closely following state or municipal politics in 1983. I'm going to ask Director Lantry if she has further clarification.
Ms. Lantry.
Madam Chair, Representative, you know, as fate would have it, I remember when the bridge was constructed in 1982 because I lived on the east side, four blocks from where I live now, don't judge, and worked in downtown St. Paul. Ironically, at the time that this bridge was handed back over to the city of St. Paul, my mother, Marilyn Lantry, was a state senator from Senate District 67, and as many times as I have asked her mom, why in the world did the state give back the bridge to the city of St. Paul, there really is no recollection of how that happened. We have looked for paperwork that shows normally now when the state of Minnesota turns back a piece of infrastructure to a municipality, there's an agreement. Nobody can find that agreement. I'm sorry that I can't share with you why that happened or how that happened. I can tell you that it is very unusual.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That answers my it doesn't answer my question, but I feel like I have the best person in the room to answer it, and there really is no awareness, so I appreciate that.
Representative Pearson?
Just thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Torkelson?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. You know, this project's been around a while, and I recall visiting the bridge. And my recollection is that at the time that it was turned back to the city, we thought the bridge had a good long life ahead of it, and it wasn't until after that turn back that these structural deficiencies were discovered. And it is an example of inadequate specifications or inadequate engineering, but it obviously, one way or another, it needs to be fixed. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Constein.
Thank you for reluctantly calling on me, Madam Chair. I was just going to say that while I was on the Mankato City Council, we got a bridge, and it just made sense because of maintenance. We took care of the plowing up to a certain point, and then the DOT had to come in and do it, and it just made it streamlined the maintenance and the plowing and things like that. Thank you.
And that reinforces what the restrictions that for safety that the people have already put on the bridge, and we certainly do want Representative Zhang's mom to get to work safely and to get across the bridge on a regular basis very safely. And so we will try to do our best to observe your first priority we make our decisions in the future. And you will be asked to be back.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. It's been a privilege, and I will look forward to that invitation back.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Representative South, you have people from far away. We've used some of their time. We will try to talk faster.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Fresh from the tundra, those from the south have arrived. As most of you are getting your news feeds, you know that we had this impediment in our transportation system. I was lucky to have escaped Monday morning, and they were still having trouble yesterday, from what I understand. So this is long-term. We're bringing 1333.
I have no control over that.
I'm sorry?
We have no control over that. But we have control over the next 7 minutes.
I expected that came with experience and the weight of knowledge that you might have. Okay, this is about a project that is the revitalization and refurbilization of the kind of historic county structure that we have all over Minnesota, and that is 60 acres of the middle of town that have been dedicated in the past. In the eyes of a lot of people, it's the fairgrounds. That's going to be transformed through this project, and so what I'll do is just turn it over to Senator Sheila Cascaden, who is coming to us through her position as county commissioner.
Thank you. Madam Chair, we do have a slideshow if it's possible to bring that up so you can see it. But we did hand out a summary of the slides. I'm just not sure how your technology works. With me is Matthew Miller, who is the Olmsted County Facilities Manager. So those of you who have visited Rochester know that we have an iconic water tower that looks like a giant ear of corn. That is on the edge. It's on private property right now, but the county is going to be acquiring that property. Because it's adjacent to Graham Park. And Graham Park was given to the county 100 years ago by Dr. Graham. And you're going to want to advance it for me, Mark. And so this was a gift 100 years ago, and it was to promote agriculture, to provide an opportunity for people to learn, and a gathering space for the community. And we have used it over the years, but it's really an underutilized asset now. Currently, it is used for agriculture, including our Olmsted County Free Fair, which is a private entity. We have a lot of animal agriculture shows that are done there and sales that are done in those grounds. We have a lot of family events and entertainment, and we have youth athletics. The thing that you need to know about Grand Park, we can do the next one, is we really see this as an underutilized asset. We have these regular users. We have the youth hockey. We get 750,000 visitors a year for youth hockey. All of our local teams play in that. We have host tournaments for statewide and regional tournaments in our hockey arenas. We have four arenas under one roof. We're the only place in the state of Minnesota that has that. The only thing that's bigger is the big, big arena up at the in Blaine. And so when we started looking at the future of Graham Park, one of the things we learned is that those four ice rinks are one of our biggest assets and that we need to build that asset. But we don't need more rinks. We need to make improvements because some of our rinks go back to 1962. Well, we're not here to ask you about those arenas. We're working on those. We also host the Free Fair, the second largest county fair in the state, about 150,000 visitors a year. And the 4-H has a dedicated building and is used year-round on our grounds. But we have occasional and single users. We have auctions and antique shows and flea markets and weddings and other families' events. We have a winter farmers market that's held there. And that attracts farmers from all the way to the southern border as a place that they can come and sell their produce. This is a regional asset, even though it's right in the heart of an urban setting and is owned by Olmsted County. As Commissioner Flynn, a very active farmer on our board, says, when he likes to go to agricultural shows. He likes to go to a place where there's other things for his family to do. And we think that as a regional economic center and as a regional hub of the agriculture in the whole region, you don't think of Rochester, you don't think of agriculture, do you? But we have a Seneca food processor, a very large employer. We have the Kemp's Dairy that produces the base for all the ice cream that Kemp's makes is made right on Main Street in Rochester on Broadway. And we have an Ampi Dairy. We have a lot of agriculture. And so we are a regional hub for a lot of different kinds of uses. And this grounds, this Graham Park master plan vision, is that we should create this as a regional asset for venues for a variety of local users. We'll continue agricultural sales and shows. That has been our base. We are inviting the farmers market to create a permanent location on these grounds. We have family events and entertainment that happens there regularly, cultural, religious events. There's a need for spaces that are affordable for the average person and the average organization, and Graham Park we see as a place that can do that. We are in already doing some sales shows. We're having a dart tournament. We have a dog show that comes there. These are things that bring in people, really, some of these things from the entire upper Midwest. So it has an economic impact for the region as well as youth hockey and youth athletics. So we are in a four phases of redevelopment. We're in phase one right now, and we're investing as a county into upgrades and improvements, not really upgrades, betterments to the four hockey arenas. We have some historic buildings on these grounds that it's hard to see, but they were built during the WPA, and they are on the list of buildings that need to be preserved in addition to that iconic water tower. We did some modest improvements to those buildings, and we went from zero weddings a year on those grounds to 30 booked for next year. So we're prototyping this, and we're seeing that with modest improvements, the people of the region will use these facilities that they have available. So why are we here to see you? Well, because we're doing phase one, which is the ordinary repairs and betterments and making things a little more hospitable. We have a facilities manager and so on now. The county is investing. But we know that we really need to look to the future. And to the future, we need to take down some of the old, at end-of-life cycle, animal agriculture buildings that only serve the fair and replace them with an expo building with plazas and parking, and that will expand the use and the users of Graham Park. So here's a rendering of what that might look like. It's a might look like. We see this as a 80 to 100,000 square foot building that's multi-purpose and designed to be multi-purpose. It can accommodate animal agriculture. It can also accommodate youth sports practice facilities. It can accommodate the trade shows that aren't going to go into our beautiful new Mayo Civic Center, which is really a kind of a high-end venue to attract convention business from around the country. This is really for our region, the kinds of shows that our local businesses, our local folks can use and it can be flexibly used. So we are looking to create this, to take down these animal agriculture buildings, put in a new building that will be used in a variety of ways, and we're asking the state to help us as a 50-50 partner. We're asking you to pay for half of the cost of that new building, $12.5 million. The county will match it. We will use that development of that expo hall as a cornerstone for renovating and reinvigorating the entire park to serve the entire region's needs. We will match the bonding, and we really believe that if we get this going, and we're already proving it with some of the things that are happening, is that we will be able to produce revenue that will do the future development of the Phase 3 and 4 of Graham Park renovation and meet our operating costs. So Phase 3, we're looking to have a permanent farmer's market. You see here one of the historic buildings. That building doesn't look like much from the outside now, but inside it has been renovated to be that beautiful wedding venue that business meeting venue. But these historic buildings don't have air conditioning, they didn't have heating, and they didn't have ADA-accommodated bathrooms. So we're doing that kind of renovation. We're doing adaptive restoration. And eventually, we see completing this festival park, we're having space for outdoor venues for cultural events and celebrations and festivals that that a variety of community organizations can use. Perhaps we have space, for instance, the Chinese New Year folks don't have enough space or a venue. The Denali Indian Festival, it doesn't have space. We're doing a lot of quinceañeras at the grounds now. So this is, it's an accessible place that people can afford to rent and use for their own community-generated festivals and not necessarily, the kind of venue that that is in our downtown locations where we're trying to fill convention space. This is very flexible, multi-use space. So our bonding request, our summary is we're going to create a regional venue. We want this to be accessible to the people, all people throughout the region. We see it as hosting events that otherwise won't happen or have a difficulty finding a place to happen. And we will continue with a focus on agriculture because we're going to celebrate our history and the future of the industry in the region. It is our second largest industrial base in our economic base for our county and our region. We're going to build on our good experience with youth hockey and other youth athletics. And we see this as a place for community and cross-cultural celebrations and gatherings. So our request to you is for $12.5 million that the county will match. And some of you saw this when we were in our early phases of our master plan development 2 years ago. We have come a long, long way in 2 years. And we are working actively to attract private interest and private support from the community as well as public support. So I don't know, Matt Miller, our facilities manager, if Madam Chair, if members have questions or if Mr. Miller wants to add anything I forgot.
Commissioner Cascaden, do you plan on asking for state help on Phase 3 and 4?
No, Madam Chair, we do not. We really believe our business plan shows that if we get the expo, we take down the old tired buildings and build this expo hall, we will produce enough revenue to be able to do 3 and 4 on our own.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Representative, and we will consider this as we're going along with our deliberations.
I know you have a long list of projects, and thank you for your time today and for your consideration.
The next item on the agenda is Representative Wogema. Representative Wogema, welcome to the committee, and please tell us about your rail project.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members. I believe that the people of central Minnesota deserve excellent options to get to work safely, to travel throughout our state, and to visit their families. That's why I am very proud and excited to present to you House File 1179. which would start the process of extending the North Star commuter rail line to St. Cloud. My fellow St. Cloud colleague, Tama Tice, is a co-author of this project, and Senator Jerry Ralph will be introducing it today over on the Senate side. The bill would provide $850,000 from the general fund for assessment and analysis activities, and the reason why it's in front of this committee today is because it would provide $6.5 million to be appropriated from the sale of GO bonds that would provide for the initial technical activities necessary to develop this project. That would include pre-design and design, preliminary and final engineering, environmental analysis and mitigation, land acquisition, including right-of-way and temporary or permanent easements, and capital improvements to tracks, signals, and rail crossings. To give you a sense of what this project, what this investment of taxpayer dollars would mean to businesses and the workforce and the economic vitality of Central Minnesota, Madam Chair, it's my great honor to recognize the president of our five-star accredited St. Cloud Area Chamber of Commerce, our president, Teresa Bonin.
Mrs. Bonin, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. And my name is Teresa Bonin. I am the president of the St. Cloud Area Chamber of Commerce, which represents 1,000 business members throughout central Minnesota. And I'm very pleased to be here today. This project, we've been working on this project for well over a decade, and it has been seen in various parts of the legislature as we continue down the path to get it completed to St. Cloud. Right now it goes to Big Lake, and there's a bus that runs back and forth on a regular basis taking passengers to Big Lake so they can board the bus or board the train and get into the Twin Cities. Our business community has a very supportive role in getting this all the way to St. Cloud. We feel like it will help us with our workforce. Their main concern, they want the train, and their main concern is developing, developing a schedule that will allow workers to come in and accommodate hours worked in St. Cloud as well as people who choose to come into the Twin Cities for work. So it's an economic piece on both sides, both ends of the track. It was interesting, yesterday I was here making some calls and I ran into two people that were here independently that were from a local law firm that were advocating on the Senate side for this North Star. So it really has broad appeal in our business community. It also will serve our student population. Some people don't realize exactly how many students we have in the area. Of course, there's St. Cloud State University, St. Cloud Technical and Community College. Also, St. John's and St. Ben's students utilize the train now, getting to Big Lake and taking it from there to come into the Twin Cities. So the student population, it's very important too as well. I'm here also to deliver the message. This isn't finished, and we really would like to see this train project finished before any others are started in the state. I know other regional centers would love to have trains running from their locations into the Twin Cities, and we feel that it's very important to have this one finished before we start other projects of this sort. So I come to support Representative Wolgamott and his bill, and appreciate you listening to me today. So thank you.
Thank you, President Bonin. And Representative Wolgamott, in your introductory remarks, you said you wanted your people to be able to visit other people. Do you have any relatives in Duluth?
No, Madam Chair, I do not. But
oh, darn.
I've got a lot of friends, and it's a great place to visit, and I would love to have any transportation option possible to go and support the Duluth area.
And then maybe they'll decide to move to Duluth and can visit by the train then, if we get to the train in Duluth yet today. Okay, Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. When I look at this project, I think about why would anybody run a train from Minneapolis towards St. Cloud, but stop short of St. Cloud. I think that the engineers that did the work on this should actually have their license examined, because it makes no sense at all. This is a project that should have been done right the first time, and it's been far too long to get it right the second time. And I actually think there is opportunity in the future for people to travel from St. Cloud to Minneapolis, have a drink, get on a train, and then travel to Duluth for the weekend. So I think there are a lot of win-win situations here, and I would encourage us to give serious consideration to this project as we move forward.
Representative Dean, it is not wise to go backwards and criticize other legislators in the past. We do what we can with each two-year terms that we have. Just a word of
Madam
mine.
Chair, I think it was the engineers I criticized. I'm confused as to why we would have stopped that big.
I would
That's
accept
all.
That, okay. But I do remember stopping short of where it was supposed to go. But we would go forth into the future rather than back. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Perhaps Representative Dean is criticizing the same engineers that designed the Kellogg Bridge. I'm not sure.
We won't go there.
Okay.
We're not.
How about the
there.
Science Museum, Madam Chair?
We're not going there.
Oh, okay.
Going forward.
As we know, the North Star Rail runs on the Class 1 railroad tracks of Burlington Northern, and I know that there's some limitations as to how far you can go with negotiations, but what is the current status of your conversations with Burlington Northern?
Representative Wolgamott.
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, I actually just met with BNSF yesterday, and they said that it looked like what this bill does to get them the information that they need. That's why we have the $850,000 for the assessment, analysis, and review of the project. They said as soon as the state has a plan that they are ready to look at it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Representative Wolgamott, your bill does much more than just an $850,000 plan, and that's where I have a pretty serious question about whether we should start investing before we know that the project has a real future.
Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Torkelson just asked my question, but just a clarification on whenever you talk commuter rail, I get concerned with having freight rail sharing the lines with passenger rail, and can you just give us some idea of the current freight travel on that roadway now or that railway now?
Representative Wolgamott.
Madam Chair, Representative Juergens, I don't have the numbers of the exact freight rail capacity that they have, but I'm sure we could get you that information at a later time. And again, BNSF did say that they felt that there was capacity to be able to juggle their needs with their freight and the needs of this North Star extension. Again, that's what this bill does, is put us in a position where we can take a look at that information and be able to present that and be in a good position for those negotiations.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick comment. Thank you, Representative Wolgamott, for bringing this forward. And this is a really important project for the region too, and for my district, because we have a lot of students that attend St. Cloud State. And when we consider the amount of travel time that they have going back and forth almost every weekend, coming back home, visiting family, and going back, that's also a public safety concern. And so I want to share that I do have a family member who was attending that got into a pretty serious car accident too, and so I feel like this is another option for the folks in our region who are attending St. Cloud State. So I just want to say thank you for bringing this forward.
Madam Chair, Representative Lee, you're absolutely correct. That's one of the top things that I hear from the students that I represent, is how much they would appreciate being able to have that option to get back and forth from the Twin Cities area to where they attend classes.
Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. And thank you. President of the Chamber, Barnes, and We will seriously consider your request.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And again, members, I just really ask that you support this investment. It's a good use of taxpayer dollars. We're going to be looking at less traffic and maintenance costs on 10 and 94. People are going to be able to get to work better, get to the airport better, be able to travel to the cities when the roads are bad. This project is a very prudent use of taxpayer dollars. And, Madam Chair, members, I hope you'll join us in supporting it. Thank you very much.
Representative Howard. Oh, God. Thank you so much. Representative Howard, welcome to the committee. Please tell us what your project that you have and what kind of consideration we should give to it.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm here to present House File 1068, funding for the 77th Street Underpass. For members that have served on this committee in this body a while, this might be familiar. And really, this is a worthy endeavor that's been in the works for, you know, the better part of two decades or more. And I want to thank former Representative Slocum and former Speaker Thiessen for their work on this issue as well. I'm going to turn it over soon, but just want to comment briefly that this really is a project of regional significance of the highest order for our metro region and a connection point to some of the greatest assets in our state in terms of the International Airport and the Mall of America. And want to mention that with this resources, we can put shovels in the ground and get through the finish line or under the finish line for the 77th Street Underpass. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to our Richfield Mayor, Maria Reagan Gonzalez.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you for having us here today and for the opportunity to speak to you about the importance and our request to please include $5 million as a part of the House Capital Investment Bill to close the final funding gap to complete the 77th Street Underpass. The underpass is not only of extreme importance to the city of Richfield, but also to the entire Twin Cities region because of the crucial connectivity that it will provide for regional transit, access to commercial districts, the airport, the Mall of America, Metro Transit South Garage, and jobs for people across the entire metro region. The connection has been long planned as an important part of the improvements on 494, which are planned to begin in 2022. The success of those improvements depends on the completion of the 77th Street Underpass. The connection is also crucial for transit options. It will provide faster, more frequent, and reliable service on two heavily used routes, the 515 and the 540. And Metro Transit ridership data shows that people need faster and more frequent service. The connection also helps businesses. Our region has a serious geographic worker mismatch. MAC, Mall of America, and Metro Transit continuously struggle to fill jobs. The 77th Street Underpass connects people to these jobs, which connects people to success and economic stability. And lastly, this isn't just about decreasing congestion on our highways and building more efficient transportation systems. This is also about opening connection to the lowest income part of this region in the metro, to the broader Twin Cities region, and to crucial jobs. And if we do not continue with the 77th Street Underpass, we are also looking at consolidation of exits on 494, which will further isolate this economically depressed region with that consolidation and without the continuation of the underpass. So the underpass will open up a gateway to this crucial part of the region and provide useful options for travel and connections to our neighborhoods, our city, and the entire region. And we ask again for your support in helping us close this $5 million gap. And I will kick it over to our Public Works Director, Kristen Asher.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Good morning. I'm going to direct your attention to the map And I'm going to give a little history about this corridor. It was the first piece of the 494 corridor that was built in Minnesota. It's the oldest, and it's the one that's yet to be reconstructed. Back in the late 80s, all the stakeholders came together, including Federal Highway, Metropolitan Council, all the member cities in this area came together, and they came up with a solution for what was the most congested area in this region, and they came up with this proposed ring route, which I've highlighted in yellow. And at the time, the solution was to have two parallel arterial roads constructed, which did not exist. And this plan was approved by everybody in the 1990s, early 1990s, and by the mid-1990s, both Bloomington and Ridgefield were full force putting in these parallel arterial routes. Ridgefield gave up a row of homes for this road, cut right through our Public Works maintenance facility at the time. And then there's other key pieces that needed to be constructed as well. And I've circled in green the advancements and the commitment that Ridgefield and Bloomington have shown to this plan. Since then, Ridgefield has delivered the reconstruction of the Penn Bridge and the Lindell Bridge, which are key. There have empty portals right now waiting for this future rebuild of 494, and they've been built for a number of years now. The Lyle Berg Bridge over 35W in Bloomington, they constructed that piece that was missing as part of this ring route. And literally the last piece of this puzzle is the underpass. And so that's why we're here. Also, I just wanted to mention that the Ridgefield has been working really hard to secure funding to complete this piece of the puzzle. This kind of was on the back burner for a little bit for MnDOT, this area of 494. As you know, last year it became right back onto the front burner, and so this is even more critical at this time. Ridgefield was able to secure $7 million in federal funds for this project. Ridgefield was before the state asking for state bonding money a number of years ago, and was the ask at that time was $20 million. We were successful in $10 million, thank you. And but we still have a gap. And since we were able to receive the $10 million, we also have had added costs to the project, including a noise wall that the Federal Highway is requiring that was unknown. That's on the order of $1 million. Additional right-of-way costs, more than we anticipated. And then, of course, construction costs continue to go up as time goes on. So we are just ready to go. The design is complete. We've got pretty much the right-of-way in hand, and we are ready to construct this thing in the spring of 2020 if we can complete this funding package. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and you've kind of answered my question. I was wondering if you'd when did you receive the state bonding money?
The state bonding money, I believe, was received in 2016.
Okay, thank you. And you planned on completing this in 2020, and this is the last piece of the money that you need?
Representative, yes, this is correct.
Thank you.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I remember the 2016 bonding bill as I was chair at the time. So was there a local match to that $10 million original allocation?
Madam Chair.
Asher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, no, there is no local match. Ridgefield has contributed a substantial amount of money into this ring route plan. Millions of dollars Ridgefield has contributed to this.
The planning of it was in kind, was it not? The people that were on the planning committee and volunteering to do the project all together?
Right, Madam Chair. I'm speaking of the dollars that Ridgefield has put in to complete the bridges and other pieces of this, including the rural homes and the project management and all that.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So when the original allocation was made in 2016, and part of this bill is to extend that original allocation, was that inadequate at the time, or was the project not fully planned? I'm kind of curious how we got here.
Ms. Asher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, the original ask in 2016 was $20 million, and the city received $10 million.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. That's interesting. I didn't remember that part of it. I'm not sure I was told. I recall an ask from then Speaker Thiessen for $10 million for this project, and we did put that in the bill. And thought I was surprised when the project did not move forward within a reasonable amount of time. So,
Ms. Asher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just, at the time when we got the $10 million, I thought that the way it made sense to me was that the right-of-way costs were unknown and it was enough to get us to secure the right-of-way needed for the project. And then I always imagined that there was anticipated that we would come back for more if we needed it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the testifiers. I'm trying to understand the project a little bit. And as I look at it, it seems that a large part of the intent is to try to remove a lot of local traffic in this area so that they have other options. Am I understanding it conceptually on what this will do in the end?
Ms. Asher.
Yes, Madam Chair. Representative, yes, you're correct. I was going to mention that this connection and the ring route itself not only accommodates the reconstruction of the corridor, but it does take off all the local trips from 24th Avenue to East Bush Lake Road. So that's the intent, and that was part of the plan. This area is fully developed. This corridor is redeveloped going through redevelopment. There's a lot of reinvestment going in this corridor, and to widen 494 to what they thought they would need would be too impactful. That's part of the solution is this ring route to remove the local trips.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this is one of those situations where we can't just add another lane of road to 494. We actually have to figure out other options.
Ms. Asher.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
Representative Pearson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry, I was confused by the math to begin with because it says $10 million on the front, $5 million on the back, and then I realized it's new language, old language, but you just said that it's a $20 million project, so you're actually still $5 million short. Am I missing something here?
Ms. Asher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, if you look on the backside with the funding, it's actually a $30.5 million project. The $10 million in state bonding has been received in 2016. And it says 30 right under the word funding and project cost. Yes.
Looking at the bill.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, so we are, yes, the ask is for an additional $5 million to, in the original, what we received originally was $10 million. We're asking for a total of $15
million. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair.
Representative Tarkelson.
Sorry to extend this, but last year's Corridors of Commerce allocation included the flyover ramp, and an additional lane on 494, the Minpass lane.
Yep.
How does that interrelate with this part of the project?
Madam Chair, Representative, that is all part of the long-term vision for the corridor. The big major project that they wanted to do with this original 1990s plan, as far as interchange goes, was too cost prohibitive. I think the last mega project that the state completed was 35W Crosstown Commons project. So they revisited the corridor and the interchange in the early 2000s, and came up with a phased plan, and that's what you're referring to as phase one, is the flyover ramp that would accommodate the northbound to westbound traffic. And then the second project is that Minpass lane. The Minpass lane does not alleviate the congestion in this corridor. It helps. So it's managing the congestion and getting reliable times is how Mandel would put it.
Interesting that, Ms. Asher, that you have a smile on your face at the same time Representative Torkelson has a smile on his face. So managing the congestion is a good thing. Representative Howard, we will consider this in our further deliberations at a later time.
Madam Chair, thank you, and thank you to the members of the committee for the discussion and consideration.
Thank you so much. Representative Mahoney. We are 15 minutes behind on the schedule. Representative Mahoney, welcome to the committee. Tell us what East Metro Rail Corridor is requesting.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and committee members for hearing this bill or as an informational hearing. I'll try to make up some of your time by just turning it over to my witness. It's a good idea. When I take the train, I hate that stopping and waiting because of this bottleneck.
We will remember your kindness to us. Mr. Gitzlaff.
Actually, Madam Chair, my name is Mike Rogers. I'm the Transit Project Manager for Ramsey County. I'm filling in for Andy on this one.
Great.
He's unable to make it. So,
Mr. Rogers.
Thank you for having me. This project, Union Pacific, Burlington Northern Santa Fe, grade separation on the east side of St. Paul is a very important project for Ramsey County and the region. Currently, this area is a major bottleneck on the rail transportation system. It impacts projects like North Star. It impacts projects like Northern Lights Express going up to Duluth because it is the transcontinental main lines for both Canadian Pacific and Burlington Northern Santa Fe. Their trains go through here. So if they're going from Chicago to the West Coast, they come through this part of St. Paul. And then Union Pacific has this as their route between the Twin Cities and Chicago. So everybody gets stuck in a mixing bowl. So we're asking for $1 million to help us work with our freight railroad partners to put together a study that will figure out the environmental implications as well as the engineering implications to grade separate this area. So essentially, when a train comes across the Robert Street lift bridge from Union Pacific that is in downtown St. Paul, and it has to turn and then go up the hill and under 94 and ultimately out to the east, that train can block everybody else from going through that area for about 45 minutes. So that BNSF train that may be sitting up on the west side of the metro is stopping a North Star train. That a Canadian Pacific train may be parked down in Hastings or Red Wing waiting for that Union Pacific train to clear out. So getting that grade separation is critically important to improving speeds, to improving safety, because now you've taken away a conflict point. So it also helps us because it allows the freight trains to move faster, which allows freight to stay on the rail instead of pushing it to trucks. That increases the wear and tear on the highway. So it can save the public quite a bit of money there from reduced maintenance costs. And it opens the door for more passenger trains to serve not only Union Depot but other areas of the state that would be impacted by this area. So in the interest of time, I'll stop there and offer up myself for any questions people might have.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Rogers, you had talked about this being a bottleneck. there's a particular area on the BNSF track in Crystal, Minnesota, that sometimes trains can sit there for 20 minutes or more, and I believe we've had conversations here about the issues around public safety relative to emergency vehicles moving through that region in that area. So I'm assuming that this will sort of, you know, hopefully relieve some of those times where trains will sit and block roads. And I only know of this because of the proximity. I'm sure there are other areas where this happens. Can you maybe walk us through sort of the magnitude of what this investment would do as far as relieving rail congestion in lots of other areas throughout the region?
Sure.
Mr. Madam Rogers.
Chair, Representative, this area of the metro handles 5% of the nation's freight rail volume, so about 10,000 freight cars a day come through here. So if you're getting stuck here, somebody in Crystal may be getting stuck because a train can't get through here. So a Crystal train is more than likely going into downtown Minneapolis, ultimately to Northtown Yard, which is on the north side of Minneapolis by Fridley. If they're waiting on a large train that's coming from Chicago to get into Northtown Yard that is stuck here, they're going to get held somewhere else outside the network. Same for a train being stuck in St. Cloud or a train being stuck down in Red Wing or wherever. When a railroad works, they will slow trains down throughout their network if somebody else is stuck because they are so long and they take so long to speed up or slow down that they will hold that train to make sure that they don't get everybody clumped into one area at one time. So even if a track is empty, it's really a lot busier than you would expect.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Considine.
Thank you, Chair Murphy. How much are the railroads kicking in to help pay for this?
Madam Chair, Representative.
Mr. Rogers.
We have asked for this project in the past. We continue to ask our freight railroad partners for $125,000 each, so looking for about a $500,000 match, including the Ramsey County $125,000 as well. So about $500,000 to match the $1 million. The actual construction cost is to be determined based on the benefit received by each railroad, as well as the state or locals as to what the mix would be on a final construction project.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Good question. Representative Torkelson?
You got it.
Okay. Representative Pearson?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess, you know, capital investment, this is my most recent committee of additions, and we're asking for this in the bonding committee, capital investment committee, but it's general fund dollars. Is there a specific reason this isn't going before the transportation committee as a request for general fund dollars for transportation?
Mr. Rogers, Representative Mahoney.
I believe it is there's a piece that says you cannot use bonding for rail construction. I think this is the piece that's looking for the cash out of the bonding bill, if there's cash in the bonding bill. And I could take some help from staff if they want to clarify that.
Ms. Dyson, do you help?
Madam Chair and Representatives, the state bond funds can only be used for publicly owned projects. These are private properties. There is a provision in the state constitution for improving and rehabilitating private railroads, but if they're talking about new construction, I don't think that would be covered under the provision. So there are two different provisions of the constitution that play into this, and so that might be why this would not fit for bond funding.
But we have precedents, and we have precedents to carry this type of thing in the bonding bill.
Sure. And actually, I think I'm wording my question wrong then, because everyone answered it. I understand the cash concept. I guess I'm asking the question, why not transportation? And maybe I'm just...
That's not me.
maybe that's a political decision, and it isn't even relevant to the conversation. And but I'm just curious.
That might be... And I've asked for a clarification of what we're carrying, what transportation committee is carrying. I haven't received my answer to that yet, and I'm still waiting.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm glad to know I'm not the only one in the room that wonders.
We're not going to let it drop, neither you or I. So thank you. Thank you very much. We will consider this as we make our deliberations. Representative Hausman, welcome to the committee.
And we could be putting it in transportation.
Madam Chair, we're going to cut our number of testifiers from 4 to 2 in light of your pressing.
Thank you. Krista's back.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I brought a visual. I brought my coffee cup, which says more passenger trains to more places, and that's the purpose of our bill. We got a late handout. Hopefully you have received that from All Aboard Minnesota. They have done a good bit of promotion and economic study about passenger rail. And so the summary sheet you have asks, why more passenger trains for Minnesota? And they give us three reasons. It generates economic growth, and they have some examples of that. Passenger trains reduce highway congestion and costs, and they give some examples of that. And finally, passenger trains offer greater mobility. And their third bullet point, I think, is a good introduction today. Trains connect urban to outstate communities. You heard that in Representative Wolgamott's bill. And offer options for those who can't or prefer not to drive or fly. College students, families with children, those who are elderly. There is an entire study that you can find online. You can view the full paper at allaboardmn.org. That address is down at the bottom. But I think as you consider all of the bills today, this economic study is worth a little more of your time. Here is the urgency of it, what they have taught me. I'm not comparing us to the coasts. I'm just comparing us to our Midwest economic competitors, and we trail our Midwest economic competitors. Everyone else is moving more quickly, accepting federal money and understanding that passenger rail is an essential part of their healthy and competitive local economy. And that includes states such as Indiana. I sat next to a gentleman that I'm able to attend the All Aboard Minnesota meetings, and he described himself as a conservative Republican from Indiana, and he was one of our speakers. Kansas, Texas, they are all moving quickly in this area. In 2009, I thought we were really moving as a state, and I was successful in getting $26 million into a bill for MnDOT to move all of the corridors that you're hearing today. And they lived on that $26 million for quite some time. Now they're broke. And so the bill that you have in front of you is an attempt to put an amount of money available to MnDOT to move all of these corridors, $15 million. You will note that the study that we need to do in the Northfield area requires a general fund, but otherwise it's an attempt to move all of the corridors. If this bill were before you, I would have had an author's amendment. You see lines 113 to 116. We describe some of what is in MnDOT's plan. You're going to talk more about NLX, the Northern Lights Express, later today, I think. But the phrase that says Twin Cities to Milwaukee high-speed passenger rail service should be deleted, that's really just another name for that second daily Amtrak train. And frankly, I have to tell you, Madam Chair, I don't ever talk about high-speed rail anymore. We're not going to do high-speed rail. I mean, we just want good passenger rail with tracks in good condition and good rolling stock. And so that particular phrase, Twin Cities to Milwaukee high-speed passenger rail, should be deleted.
With Wi-Fi access, Representative.
Correct. You have a couple of other handouts in your packet, and they come from, they're specifically to the, since Representative Wolgamont has already talked about the one part of this bill, and you're going to talk about another part on the agenda. I think we'll concentrate. Your handouts deal with the second train. There's huge local support, as you can see from one of those handouts. Winona, Goodview, Red Wing, Harmony, Minnesota. And you've heard that from St. Cloud, and I know we'll hear it from Duluth. Huge local support on all of these projects. So we have two testifiers with us today.
Commissioner.
Yes, hello, Madam Chair.
Welcome.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Commissioner Trista Matas-Castile from Ramsey County, here to testify in support of a second train to Chicago. We have done quite a bit of work prepping for this in the last several years, and I want you to know that Ramsey County has already put $300,000 into this project, as well as $400,000 coming out of Wisconsin. And though we're asking for $4 million in this bill, I want you to know simultaneously in Wisconsin there are bills moving through, bipartisan bills moving through the legislature for $12 million. So know that we are working very closely with our partners as we build this second train to Chicago. And so just want to touch base on some facts so that you know is that this would be complementary to the Amtrak Empire Builder train that now goes to Chicago. Many of you are familiar. I know I am. My mother-in-law only comes to visit from Chicago on the Empire Builder. She has limited mobility and is the right course. So having a second train would help personally, as well as for the city. And that would actually double our ridership, which is about and putting about 155,000 more trips, which is pretty impressive. This project is led by the Minnesota Department of Transportation in partnership with Wisconsin and Illinois DOTs, Ramsey County, and the La Crosse Area Planning Committee. Service schedules have been evaluated and conceptual engineering and cost estimates prepared for track and signal improvement in Minnesota and Wisconsin to accommodate the second train. The second train would run at a top speed of 75 miles per hour, so not a high-speed rail, as Representative Hausman mentioned, and stop at all the cities currently served by the Amtrak's Empire Builder, including Winona, Red Wing, and St. Paul. The second train will provide a safe, reliable travel alternative, which, of course, will benefit our economy, as is demonstrated in your handouts. And Ramsey County and the Great River Rail Commission really support this investment of an additional $4 million for environmental analysis, service development plan, and final design of this project. So we encourage you to support it as well. I also just want to mention is that the second train is to designed to avoid some of the pitfalls that the current Empire Builder has. If you've ever ridden it, if there's other rail issues, that train stops and can often be delayed. I know I have picked my mother-in-law up at 2 a.m. in the morning instead of 10 p.m., things like that. And so this would avoid that and keep our reliability of our train. So thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kevin Roggenbuck. I'm a senior transportation planner with Ramsey County. I'm also staff to the Great River Rail Commission. Ramsey County is a charter member of the Great River Rail Commission formed in 2009. We also serve as the fiscal agent for the Great River Rail Commission, and I am their staff person. Commission membership includes local elected officials from 17 city and county governments and from one regional planning commission along the Mississippi River from St. Paul to La Crosse, Wisconsin. We are a joint powers board. We assess dues to ourselves to be a good advocacy organization and support research also for a second train to Chicago and for other passenger rail service in the region. Our intercity passenger rail service is important to Minnesota's economy. Amtrak purchased $60 million in goods and services from Minnesota businesses in 2016. Almost half of Amtrak's riders are tourists. Tourism is very important to the river cities, the river communities between St. Paul and La Crosse, the small communities along the river that have festivals, that have small colleges and other events going on. It's very important for them to have access to customers, I guess, outside that region. Expanding intercity passenger rail improves people's mobility. Amtrak is very important to small cities also without airline service. Amtrak service is their link to the rest of the country and outside the nation. 41% of the students in the Red Wing and the Red Wing and Winona area colleges have ridden Amtrak. I think Representative Hausman mentioned a survey of college students. Amtrak service is very important to those communities and those colleges to get students to come in and attend school from outside the region. In Minnesota, about 11% of Amtrak riders have said they would not travel if passenger rail was not available. These are people who are making a conscious decision to ride Amtrak because they don't want to drive or they can't drive, they can't afford to fly, or they don't want to take an intercity bus. Cities, counties, and chambers of commerce in Minnesota along the river have passed or will pass resolutions of support for funding for the TCMC second train. The Great River Rail Commission fully supports the second train and asks the legislature's support in funding the environmental analysis, service development planning, and final design for this valuable project. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, at one point, when I first started working on passenger rail, we actually had a dream that there might be six trains a day to going to between the Twin Cities and Chicago. Now we're down to one. So our dreams have changed. But transportation alternatives, for so many reasons, are a vital part of our transportation system. You're hearing what this bill intends is to move the entire state rail plan forward, and you're hearing from two of those other alternatives today in your meeting as well. Yeah. There's so much more to say, but in light of your tight time frame, I think we'll stop there.
Thank you. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as I'm thinking about this, my mind just sort of went, because I've never thought about going down to Winona for the day on the train. And if there was more service, that's actually something you could do. You could leave St. Paul. I'd leave Minneapolis, take the Green Line to St. Paul, and then head down, spend the day in Winona, and then be able to actually come back at the nighttime to be back in my house. So this was a really great presentation that got my mind to think totally different about how I consider using rail. This line doesn't just go to Chicago. It goes to lots of other places along the way. So thanks for the presentation.
And, Madam Chair, that is why there's strong local support. If you went to Red Wing or Winona or any of the other places along the way, they understand that what Representative Dean just said.
And it connects rather than isolates. Yes. Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I remember being on the Economic Development Authority in Cottage Grove several years ago, and we had a presentation on high-speed rail. And my perception at that time is, why would we do that? Let's just add a train, an Amtrak train. So this is fitting right in with what the thoughts were back then. My question is, you mentioned different modes of transportation. I'm curious as far as the comparison of cost between Amtrak and the Megabus, and maybe also the length of the trip, too. How long does it take on Amtrak versus the bus?
Yeah. Madam Chair and Representative, I'm not sure what the travel time is on the bus, on a Megabus trip to Chicago. The travel time plan for the Great River Rail Commission, or rather for the TCMC second train, would be about 7.5 hours. It's a little bit shorter than an Empire Builder trip from, say, St. Paul to Chicago now. Some of the improvements that we have planned in the TCMC study include adding siding and converting siding to main track, improving switches and things like that to provide more capacity in and around Winona, in and around La Crosse, and a location in Wisconsin to eliminate conflicts with freight trains and other traffic.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, I'll look that up. I think the travel time is pretty similar to the Megabus, but I'll look that up myself and confirm it. Cost-wise, do you have any comparisons?
Megabus is really, really inexpensive.
Inexpensive.
Isn't that right? I
mean, it is.
We'll see if we can find that for you.
Okay. Thank you. No further questions.
Representative Salk.
You've referred to it just a little bit. The question is, what actually is going to change in terms of such an improvement? I rode on the train one time from St. Paul to Chicago, kind of a personal adventure for my wife and I. So what I found was it was cheaper for me to drive, including parking my car in Chicago, than to take the train, and particularly the use of the hour of the day. I ended up using probably around 3-4 extra hours, not in the schedule, but we were not on schedule, because we were always on sidings, waiting for the freights to have priority access, waiting for other conflicts that exist, which are physical, like there just aren't enough tracks to accommodate this improved traffic. So I think that the idea is always going to be yes on surveys, because we all imagine that we can get in this train and get to where we theoretically want to get to. But the experience is dead after one trip, at least for folks like myself.
Mr. Robeck.
Yeah. Madam Chair.
Rogenbach.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. The TCMC second train would run only between St. Paul and Chicago. The delays that we experience eastbound on the Amtrak's Empire Builder generally it travels all the way from the West Coast. There are many opportunities for the Empire Builder to be delayed in the mountain states and in North Dakota in oil train traffic. This would be a more reliable service simply between the Twin Cities and Chicago, stopping at all the other Amtrak station cities along the way. Westbound out of Chicago, the train generally leaves on time because it's coming out of Chicago, and no delays until it hits its more freight traffic farther west. And I mentioned the improvements that we have identified through the study in the Winona area and the La Crosse area, and I think it's Columbus, Wisconsin area too, are designed to avoid those times when the passenger train would be sitting on a siding waiting for a freight train to clear the tracks so it can move ahead. We would have additional capacity on these tracks to accommodate that kind of traffic, so you could have more more two-way traffic where you wouldn't have those kinds of delays. And it's also a benefit to the freight movers as well. They have additional track and additional siding that they can use for their purposes.
Thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Quickly, first of all, anything bus, train is better than driving a car in Chicago. Horrible experiences doing that. But now, basically, the cost that is occurring here, you have a you're using the same track, and your cost is the cost of improving to run another train and the things that are needed. Is that correct?
Madam Chair and Representative, yes. It's the equivalent of adding a turn lane to a highway or better shoulders on a highway. We're using the same track within the, in the existing right-of-way of Canadian Pacific's railway connection between here and Chicago.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rogenbeck and Commissioner.
And so the point of this bill, Madam Chair, is we support the whole system. We support all of these things going forward, as the CUP says, more passenger trains to more places.
A progressive idea going into the future.
Madam Chair.
Please remain, Representative Hausman. I think you're next. Representative Jurgens.
Madam Chair, I have an answer. I looked it up. Megabus is $35 and takes 8 hours. And I might have just bought a ticket. I'm not sure.
Very good. Okay. We have three bills left. We have 5 minutes.
Madam Chair, I am pinch hitting for Representative Pinto, who is otherwise occupied, and I won't say anything. I'll just go directly to the testifier, and we'll save a little time.
Mr. Rogers, tell us about the Riverview Corridor Transitway.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. So the Riverview Corridor Transitway is a transitway that has been talked about for quite some time. It is one of the legs of the transit triangle connecting Minneapolis and St. Paul, as well as the airport. Riverview itself was re-looked at about 3 years ago. We completed a pre-project development study that identified modern streetcar connecting Union Depot and downtown St. Paul, utilizing West 7th Street to connect the neighborhoods between downtown St. Paul, the airport, and Mall of America. This project would, when built, carry about 21,000 riders a day in 2040. Of that amount, 4,600 are transit dependent, so there's lots of areas of concentrated poverty along the corridor, lots of areas of affordable housing, so this would help get them to jobs, get them to education, get them to recreational opportunities, as well as providing a new way for people to get around. It's estimated to cost about $2 billion when built, so it is not a cheap project. It is a very complex project. It would utilize existing tracks that Green Line and Blue Line have, as well as constructing new track of its own. We are looking for $2 million to help us with the next phase of study, which would get us through environmental analysis, as well as get us up to about 15% engineering to help us figure out exactly how we would cross the river, how we would go through Fort Snelling, and how to minimize impacts along the corridor as well. So, again, with the 5 minutes we have left and knowing that there's more bills behind this, I'll stand for any questions.
And, Madam Chair, when I first started on this, we imagined our map showed a triangle that connected all of the major population centers, Minneapolis, St. Paul, the airport, and the Mall of America. And we have completed two sides of that triangle with the blue line and the green line. This is the third side of the triangle.
That's great. You're really good, Mr. Rogers, and that project is now on the spreadsheet. So we just need two more now.
Thank you, Madam.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. You did excellent work today. Representative Fisher, Rush Line.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
1 minute.
It's a bus rapid transit corridor. It's for funding to continue the work design that needs to be done. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mike Rogers, Transit Project Manager with Ramsey County.
Okay, I will also be brief on this one, Madam Chair. So this would connect White Bear Lake, neighborhoods in between, downtown St. Paul. It would connect with Riverview Corridor. It would connect with the Gold Line Corridor going to Woodbury. It would connect as well with Green Line. Some of the important parts of this corridor are the health institutions along this corridor, Regents Hospital, St. John's Hospital, a lot of the health facilities that have been built along Phelan Boulevard through the east side of St. Paul are all connected via this corridor. So it would provide bus rapid transit service similar to light rail service, but done with buses on a dedicated guideway for the majority of the route. It would utilize city streets otherwise. It would have very nice stations similar to light rail stations, and it would have frequencies of about 10 minutes every day during the peaks for people to be able to get back and forth instead of where most of the service today is focused on the peak inbound and peak outbound in the afternoon. So with that, Any questions? Oh, the request is for $2 million as well to get us through more engineering work and any additional environmental that we need to do. We are currently involved in environmental work on this corridor.
Thank you, Mr. Roger. Your project is considered, and thank you, Representative Fisher.
Thank you. Thank you for the time, committee.
Chair Murphy? Madam Chair, you got a minute, too. I don't want to rush you, but the committee members have suggested that. So, Madam Chair, Councilmember Johnson.
You, members of the committee, you can't imagine how happy I am to be before you today with the final request for the design, the final design of the Northern Lights Express, which I've been working on for since Willard Munger stopped working on the Amtrak thing, from connecting Minneapolis to the Speaker's district to my district. This is going to be great. Ken Bieler is here, and he can talk really fast and really short.
Mr. Bieler?
Madam Chair, representatives, thank you very much for this time. Good morning. In the urgency of the matter, I am going to turn it over to Councilor Andrew Johnson from Minneapolis, who is the vice chair of the Alliance for Northern Lights Express.
Councilmember Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives. This is a very exciting project. Passenger rail from Minneapolis to Duluth is part of a larger regional transportation network. I believe we actually have a slide on that that we'll pull up. But it's the only passenger rail project in the nation that's shovel ready. It has a finding of no significant impacts. Right now we have an opportunity to get 4-to-1 leverage with federal dollars. So this bonding bill will go a long way in helping advance this project. It'll serve approximately 1 million passengers a year by 2040. It has huge workforce development, economic development, opportunities from some of these other projects you've heard. It serves the student populations. But I also want to put in a plug here. In Ward 12, which I represent, we have the VA Medical Center. It serves over 18,000 veterans across Minnesota and western Wisconsin. And this would be a major benefit to those veterans, which sometimes get up at 3 a.m. in the morning. They have to rely on volunteer drivers, and it turns into a more than all-day affair to get down and get the service that they need. And I would, we would love your support for this project, which is really a One Minnesota project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Murphy and Representative Wolgamott.
Vice Chair Lee, I've had the opportunity to review the minutes from our February 27th meeting, and I would like to move that they be approved.
Move for approval of the minutes.
Aye.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. Minutes are approved. Chair Murphy?
Nays? Ask for nays.
Yeah. And the nays?
Sure, nays.
Minutes are approved. Madam Chair? This meeting is adjourned. Thank you.